welcome. This is Bob Proctor with your final lesson in the Lead the Field seminar, Leading in the New Economy. Earl began by suggesting, every business, every organization, from the smallest to the largest, needs a leader. They have their committees, their echelons of command, and perhaps a widely dispersed group of semi-autonomous divisions. But the overall company and each of its divisions must have strong and able leadership. Contrary to popular belief, you do not raise morale in an organization. It filters down from the top. The attitudes of the people in any organization will always reflect the attitude of the leader. And finally, this leader will always be found to be just one person. I have listened to this lesson over the years, probably 1,000 times. It's a phenomenal lesson. This is the lesson where we take the wisdom of the ages that incorporated in the other 11 lessons and use it in a truly lawful manner. We want to give it to others. Chris Haggerty, a leading management consultant who was also a very good friend of Lloyd Conant and Earl Nightingale, said something on this subject many years ago that I will never forget. He said the goal of most leaders is to get the person to think highly of them as a leader, but the goal of the exceptional leader is to get the people to think highly of themselves. That is the only type of leader who will hold a leadership role in the new economy. Take a moment right now and think of one person in your industry who, in your opinion, would stand head and shoulders above everyone else in your industry when it comes to leadership. That is the person you want to model. If you will make a decision right here and now that you will learn all you can from that person over the next 5 years, I can assure you that you will be richly rewarded for the rest of your life. Keep in mind that person is human. They will have shortcomings and defects in their character that you will quickly spot if that's what you're looking for. However, if you are focused on developing yourself into a true leader in this new economy, you will be wise to completely ignore that part of their personality and focus on their strengths, on what makes them unique, the characteristics that enabled them to master their craft. Who is that person? Earl Nightingale was the name that came to my mind close to 40 years ago. I began to study his personality and ultimately ended up working with him. I watched how he worked, became familiar with the books he studied, how he approached the goals that he worked toward. He was my model, and when I chose him, I received added benefits because I also got his business partner Lloyd Conant as a model, and he was a great businessman. Plus, a number of others that I will not bother to go into at this time. It seems to work that way. It's like Earl said about words. When you study the meaning of one word, you pick up 8 or 9 other new words along with it. I could not begin to tell you the number of meaningful relationships that I have developed as a result of choosing him for a partner. They are too numerous to mention, and the benefits that have accrued as a result of those relationships would fill a number of books. I'm not suggesting that you follow the path I took, where you quit what you are doing, move to another city or possibly another country to work with this person, but I am suggesting that you seriously study what they're doing, where they come from, and how they got where they are. I'm always being asked what Earl Nightingale was like, and I keep repeating, he was a unique guy. Without wandering off course, it might be of interest to you to know that Earl Nightingale was one of a handful of survivors who was on the Arizona on the 7th of December, 1941, when it was bombed at Pearl Harbor. Take a moment right now, take a sheet of paper, and write a short directive to yourself, stating what you want to learn about the person you want to emulate and how you can begin immediately. I did it. It works. Try it. You'll like it. Now, Earl Nightingale continues by saying, I'm sure you're aware that even the largest and oldest companies, with many thousands of employees and hundreds of management people, will, when they find themselves in trouble or not doing as well as they should, seek out one person and place that person in the position of final authority. The whole company, the board of directors, and perhaps thousands of stockholders will look to this one person for leadership and success. When you find a successful going concern, whether it's a gas station, a supermarket, school club, PTA, or a well-organized home, you'll find behind its success an outstanding leader. This is the most valuable person in society. In industry, they make the wheels turn, the entire economy work. This is the person who's been responsible for the growth of nations and their position in the world. They're the employer of millions. They're the dreamer, the planner, and a clock to them is something that other people watch. You'll find them working early and late, and when they're not working, they're usually planning. Do you know, Lloyd Conant, who I'll be making further reference to in this lesson, was another wonderful model. Most of the great lessons in business I learned from Lloyd. He had a wonderful philosophy. I remember him saying many times that the first 40 hours you work in a week are designed to take care of life's necessities. If you want the extras, you'll truly have to go the extra mile and forget the clock. Well, Earl said much the same thing. Back during the Depression of the 30s, the phrase most often heard by employers was, "I'll do anything." Millions were unemployed. Thousands of business firms had closed their doors, and outside employment offices, long lines of people stood waiting for any kind of work. It was during this time in Long Beach, California, crowded to overflowing with thousands who had migrated there looking for work when there wasn't enough work to go around for the permanent residents, that a friend of mine made an interesting discovery. He found that he could go to work almost anywhere he chose. Now, as amazing as this may sound, it's true. It dawned upon him one day that the business establishment of various kinds were just as anxious to succeed as were the people looking for work. The owners and managers of these businesses were worried and concerned over the hard times which had descended upon the country, and a great many of them were looking for someone to come to their aid, the person who could somehow show up and solve their business problems. But all they heard was people asking for work saying, "I'll do anything." These people were asking for a paycheck from a person who is very likely teetering on the brink of financial ruin himself. And so signs appeared in windows all over the land reading, "No help wanted." This was a negative form of advertising, and while it kept the plaintive hordes away from the door, it also hurt business. Well, this friend of mine decided to become a part of the solution instead of a part of the problem. And his method was simple, and it worked like a charm. He selected the kind of business he felt he would like to work in and in which he would build his career. He then devoted a month to finding out all he could about that particular business. He talked to other people in the same line. He heard their problems and what they felt was wrong. He talked for hours, asking questions about what they felt was needed, and so on. He went to the public library and read everything he could find on that industry. Then he began to think of ways and means by which this business might be improved. When he was ready and finally made his call on the company for which he had decided to work, instead of asking for a job, he said something like this, "I believe I know several ways in which your business can be greatly increased, and I'd like to talk to you about them." Well, here he was, selling the one thing on earth in which his prospect was most interested. The fact that he now knew a good deal about the man's problems permitted him to talk intelligently. He took a positive attitude, expressed a willingness to pitch in and help the man put his business on a sound and profitable footing. And that's right, he got the job. Millions out of work, asking for jobs, but one man who found a way to be of help. What had he done? Well, first, he had specialized. He had selected one line of work and decided that was where his future would be. Now, he had to prove himself, and he did. The jack of all trades and master of none was the man who suffered during the Depression. People who knew what they were doing and where they were going sailed through those Depression years just as a large ship sails through a storm. It wasn't as comfortable as it could have been, but at least the crossing was a success. At least they didn't flounder, and thousands of businesses actually grew larger and prospered. The best way for you to develop the security that lasts a lifetime is to become outstanding at one particular line of work. Look at it this way. Regardless of economic ups and downs, the industry of which that line of work is a part will continue to operate. It won't shut down completely. As long as you're in the top 3% of the people in that industry, you know you'll always be in demand. You will be wanted and needed, not just where the industry is concerned, but where you and your family are concerned also. The man or woman who becomes truly outstanding at what he or she does has the world on a string. Here's where the person of confidence and peace of mind. Here's the person who's quietly aware of their ability and intimate knowledge of their job and their particular industry. Now, here's the homemaker or student who's at the top of the group. They've got it made. They and everybody else know it. Ask yourself this question. Am I such a person? Deep down inside, you know the answer. If you've answered yes, you're among the most fortunate people and in one of the smallest and most elite groups on earth. If you've answered no, it can be turned into a yes in a surprisingly short period of time. This is a lesson that I like going back to over and over and over again, and I'm quite certain as you become more familiar with it, you will too. This lesson on leadership has two important components. One half of the equation has to do with the business or industry you are in, and the other half has to do with people, the people you will be leading. It was while I was working with Earl Nightingale and Lloyd Conant that this lesson first became very obvious to me. If you're going to build an organization of value, you will want to master both or be in partnership with an individual who has mastered one. Lloyd Conant knew how to work with people better than anyone I have ever met, before or since. If there is one secret in leading people, it is to generate an atmosphere in which others feel at ease and appreciated. A survey made of office employees by veteran business educator H. Chandler Hunt, which showed that only 24% of the employees were held back from promotion because they did not know the details of the higher job. Most of them were not promoted because they had glaring weaknesses in their human relationships in the office. This is an area where Lloyd Conant would shine. Leaders get work done through people. Leverage is the name of the game. Teamwork is essential up and down the line, but human relations are likely to be strained when people have to be asked to do things which they have not planned themselves or which they may not be keen on doing. Every person is in a leadership role. The manager or supervisor, senior distributors, the parent or guardian, salespeople of all type, has to do many things which go against the grain in handling workers, customers, prospects, downline, or children. There is less strain on human relations when such unavoidable duties are done in a favorable human atmosphere. The effective leader must be a strong originator. That person must be able to originate a constructive idea and to concentrate on that idea to reject any other idea that is presented to them which would not aid in the manifestation of the original idea. Most people find this very difficult to do because our conscious mind is getting bombarded with ideas every minute. Think of all the activity that is going on around us at any given moment, screaming for our conscious attention. Then, when you consider the conscious mind can only entertain one single idea at a time, concentrating on an idea is not something a weak-minded person will do. Leaders have a highly evolved will. That is the intellectual factor that gives us the ability to concentrate. Even when an individual has developed expertise in this area, that alone will not make a person a good leader. A good leader must also know how to be a good follower. Strong leaders have a deep appreciation for the creative abilities of others. They are acutely aware that everyone's ideas come from one infinite source of supply. They therefore recognize and respect the genius in others. They are capable of becoming subjective to someone else's idea, giving the other person credit for the idea, and then executing that idea by carrying it through to its completion. The truly effective leader in the new economy will know when to be which, originator or executive. It has been said many times that we can accomplish almost anything when we don't care who gets the credit. The effective leader understands how to develop what is sometimes referred to as the composite personality. This is where two or more people are working together as one unified power. That was Lloyd Conant's real strength. Now, to build a composite personality, it's necessary to have a respectable amount of understanding of the three parts in everyone's personality. You'll remember the conscious mind, the subconscious, and the body from previous lessons. And you must truly understand how these three parts function. Now, this information was elaborated on in previous lessons. Remember the model of the mind, the conscious, and the subconscious. We've referred to it many times throughout this entire program. Then in the lesson, It's Easier to Win, we introduced you to the model again. However, we added a couple of new ideas. We stated the conscious mind has the ability to accept or reject, and the subconscious only has the ability to accept. We also stated that whatever's impressed upon the subconscious is then expressed with and through the instrument of the mind, namely the body. In It's Easier to Win, we divided the conscious mind into two parts. We said that the conscious mind had the ability to reason inductively and deductively, while the subconscious was totally deductive. You'll possibly remember where we said the inductive reasoning factor was going from the specific to the general, where you pick individual ideas and form a premise or an idea. The deductive reasoning is where you take an idea and you act on it until it's completed. In other words, you go from the general to the specific. Earl went on to point out, the first step is to make one big and really important decision. It's a decision the great majority of people never make and suffer as a result. Failing to make this decision keeps a person from ever really getting on course and clarifying their goals. If you'll make the decision I'm going to recommend, you can take a deep breath, give a comfortable sigh of relief, fix your eyes firmly upon your target, and go to work relaxed, comfortable, and sure in the knowledge that the success you seek will be yours. The great steel magnate, Andrew Carnegie, when asked for his formula of success, answered, "Put all your eggs in one basket, then watch that basket." This concept of Carnegie's in no way negates the idea of having multiple sources of income. I have diligently watched the basket that all my eggs are in for a number of years. And that basket has enabled me to set up sources of income from various places around the globe. Earl goes on to say, let's be frankly realistic. Who gets laid off during an economic slump? Well, what gets thrown over the side when a ship is in danger of going down? Everything not absolutely vital to the operation of the craft and the safety of its passengers. And it's the same with a business or any other organization, with a corporation. Its main purpose is to remain in business forever. As long as it remains in business, it can provide a needed product or service, protect the investment of those who have faith in it, and provide jobs for those who are vital to its continuity of operation. It's the duty of management to protect the firm and the people who depend upon it, just as it's the captain's duty to do everything in their power to keep their ship sailing. All a person needs to do is make certain that they are a vital part of their business or organization. Those who insist on remaining spare gear must expect to be jettisoned when things get too rough for safety. Nobody, particularly the captain, likes to see cargo thrown over the side. But if it'll help save the ship, there's simply nothing else to do. That's why people are laid off. It has nothing to do with management or labor relations or personalities. And in the long run, it's best for everyone. Since once smooth sailing has again been reached, additional employment can again be made available. So each of us must decide whether we want to be part of the cargo or a member of the crew. It's said that millions suffer from a malady called panophobia. Panophobia means fear of everything. It's an uneasy feeling, a feeling of insecurity that generally manifests itself as sort of a lump of fear which settles behind the belt buckle, especially on Sunday evening and Monday morning. There's nothing you can put your finger on. It's just apprehension, a fear of foreboding. And this extremely unpleasant condition is said to result from the unspoken but realized fact that we're getting credit for more than we're actually doing. It's the perfectly natural and normal understanding deep within each of us that there's something basically wrong with getting praise that's not earned, or if you are an employee, being paid for something you're not doing as well as you possibly can. If we have panophobia, running does no good. We find it follows us on vacations and around the house, in the yard, on weekends. It's inside us, no matter how fast the jet we board or how exciting the television program we're watching, soon we're aware of it again. Now, there's a simple cure for this malady. It's to throw ourselves not out the window, but into activity, into our work. It's the decision to be worth more than we're being paid. Only in this way can we grow. It's overbalancing the scales in the service we give, knowing that our rewards must follow as a natural result. Now, anyone who will be honest with themselves realizes that they've been happiest and most satisfied after having successfully completed a difficult job. A leader is a person who can help and lead others. It's the conscientious mother who wants her children to grow up knowing the rules for success and happiness. It's the father who shows by example that any job worth doing is worth doing well. It's the student who studies to learn, not just to get a grade, who has a mind of his own and sets the pace for his fellow students. It's the farmer whose farm sets an example in their area, and the small business person whose business continues to grow and prosper with the passing years. It's the employee who has the good sense to realize that they get most out of their job by giving loyalty and dedication to the firm that pays their wages. A leader is any person who realizes the importance of becoming a bigger and a better person with the passing of every day, week, and month. A leader takes the responsibility of their own growth. They're a planner, a thinker, a doer. Each of us can become such a leader in our own area of activity. It's not difficult, and in the long run, it's easier for us and on us than what at first may appear to be the easiest of two courses. Simply fix your eye upon your goal. Visualize it with every ounce of your being and courageously set out toward it. Maintain a cheerful, helpful attitude toward everyone. Why shouldn't you be cheerful, since you know you'll achieve everything you've set your heart upon? You know, you just can't beat this information that he's sharing with us. Earlier in this lesson, I spoke of how important it was for a leader to be able to build a composite with other personalities, either on an individual or a group basis. Now, we've graphically illustrated this in your management guide, but I want you to build an image of it in your mind. Effective leaders create an atmosphere where people want to follow them. They begin by communicating their ideas on a conscious level through words, gestures, and writing. From a psychological perspective, the leader actually causes or provokes the follower to activate their inductive reasoning factor. In the vernacular, we say they begin thinking about the leader's idea. Thinking leads to more serious form of thought. Their mind begins to focus on the idea. And as they do, they begin to see the value of the idea and the benefits that will accrue to them when they are personally involved in the idea. Now, at this point, the follower begins to get emotionally involved with the idea, the values, and the benefits. When this happens, they are intellectually, emotionally, and physically tuned in to the frequency of thought and action that the leader has previously decided upon. Now, they are both moving toward the same end result. The energy is now compounding. The follower stops thinking and leaves himself wide open to the thoughts, feelings, and actions of the leader. At that point, this is when the composite is formed. You must remember, they are not blindly following anyone. They thought about it. It was their decision. The idea then is transferred from the intellectual mind of the leader to the emotional mind of the follower. And as we've already covered in previous lessons, whenever ideas are impressed upon the subconscious mind, must express those ideas through the only medium they can be expressed through, the physical body. The follower then will get involved in whatever actions are necessary to have the ideas expressed in physical form or results. This mental process is referred to as selling, although few salespeople understand it at this level. There are only three ways for an individual to form a composite of this nature with another individual, and that's through fascination, agreement, or shock. The effective leader always works on agreement. They want it to be the follower's decision. An individual working with this knowledge could without difficulty manipulate a person. In fact, this is exactly how manipulation occurs. What the manipulator does not understand is that they are a part of an orderly universe and are subject to exact laws, and that what they sow, they reap. The manipulator never really wins, however much from time to time it may appear that they do. The effective leader is dedicated to improving the quality of life for all their followers. Let me give you a few suggestions that will help you develop a composite with another individual. Every day, you're forming a composite with another personality, although you might not be aware of what is actually taking place. Whenever one person originates an idea and another person acts on that idea without giving conscious thought to it, a composite has been formed. By understanding this process, you can become very effective. A person who masters the technique of forming a composite with individuals or groups will enjoy a truly abundant life. I've already mentioned that Lloyd Conant was a master at this, although I'd question whether he could articulate on how the mental faculties were actually being affected and why. He was just a really good person who truly loved helping others, and when you were in his presence, he sensed that you were eager to do anything you could to help him reach the objectives that he shared with you. In fact, he was such an exceptional leader, everyone felt fortunate they had been chosen by him to be a part of his team. To form a composite with another person, that person must have faith in you. You must be in harmonious vibration or in rapport. In order to influence another person, the person must be willing to listen to you and believe in you. Also, when you give a suggestion that you want the person to act on, the suggestion must have power behind it, and power comes with concentration. If you are concentrating intently on what you are saying, and if you believe what you are saying, then the suggestion will have more power than if it's given in a haphazard manner. Before the composite is formed and the other person is receptive to your suggestions, their inductive reasoning factor, that's their thinking mind, must be shut down or set aside. We quite often refer to this as getting a person's attention or developing the right atmosphere. Here are a few simple rules you can follow, which are sure to make you more effective in developing the atmosphere and building a composite personality. Ask questions and listen intently. Have a confident bearing. Be direct. Be sincere. Be friendly. Be a good finder. In other words, look for the good in everyone. Harness criticism. Increase others' self-esteem. And call them by name often. To develop your ability to give suggestions that another person will accept, it's absolutely essential that you practice. You must know in advance what the suggestion is that you're going to give the other person and how you will say it. Now, this is worth repeating. To give a suggestion that will stick, you must have it figured out in advance. The suggestion must be given when the person is listening to you and not when they're thinking. Now, here are a few simple rules to follow. Have a very clear, concise idea that you wish to see expressed. You must communicate your idea verbally, in writing, or by gesture. If given verbally, the suggestion must be given in an authoritative tone of voice. Always remember, the subconscious mind works in a deductive manner. It has no ability to reject. The suggestion must be complete in its entirety, because the subconscious mind does not reason or think. It merely acts and obeys. And finally, to lead the field in the new economy, Earl Nightingale tells us that we should become a kind of a sponge for information that will help us on our way. You don't have to waste years making the mistakes others have made before. You'll be surprised at how quickly you'll reach your goal. But don't be impatient. Know and have faith that what should come to you will come to you and in the right time. Everything works on the side of the person who works with nature's laws. And above all, if you should forget everything else, remember that everything about you, everything you will ever have, know, or experience in any way, operates as a result of law. Law that is true and unchanging. The law of the stars and of the balance of the world. As Emerson wrote, "Let him learn a prudence of a higher strain. Let him learn that everything in nature, even dust and feathers, go by law and not by luck, and that what he sows, he reaps." Look about you now. Take stock of your present situation, because it's nothing more nor less than the result of your past sowing. Are you happy with it? Is it what you want? Then you know what you must sow today, tomorrow, and the next day. And in the sowing, rest in the calm, serene, and cheerful certainty that having sown, you will then reap the rich results, the abundant harvest. Let me mention that it's been a real pleasure sharing the years of study that I have put into this program with you. I truly hope you'll gain all the benefits from it that I have. And I'm going to suggest that you use it the way I did. Keep listening to it over and over and over again, and share it with your friends. Let them know that you've got something that is truly valuable. This is a jewel. It is without question the most effective program on personal growth that has ever been created. In the 40 years that I have studied this subject, I have never found anything that will equal it. I want to thank you. This is Bob Proctor.